This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Kathy Griffin's fate at CNN has been decided. We have the details on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Welcome to the show, everybody. Glad to be back with you after a unfortunately long vacation. I was actually sick for the past 2 days, so I was not able to be in here with you live, but I'm glad to be back with you. Sorry about that. I actually feel a little bit like a liberal today, because my head's in a fog. I can't really think clearly. I'm all hopped up on herbal tea to try to help my throat. And on top of that, because of the impediment in my voice, you probably won't be able to understand half the things I'm saying. So it's kind of like being a liberal on the airwaves this morning.
You should have told me about that, that you had become a liberal. I could have loaded a rim shot.
That's exactly what that was my ailment. I became liberal, and that's why I couldn't come in. No,
well,
I'm kidding.
But welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jake.
I wasn't here either.
Yeah, well,
thanks to you. I had the longest Memorial Day weekend in history for me.
Right, that's what it felt like. But anyway, we are back. We're glad to be back with you, and we do want to get straight into the news. Everything that's going on with this Kathy Griffin story, boy, this thing has really exploded in a way that I'm fairly certain that she did not believe was going to. But Kathy Griffin has this cushy yearly gig with CNN, which I guess is probably not a huge deal because she works essentially for, she's on the air for one night a year. I assume that there's probably a week or so of prep that goes into that. But the point is, it's only one time a year she does that New Year's Eve thing with Anderson Cooper. And CNN, of course, being a news organization, we're really feeling the heat after she, a picture was leaked to TMZ of Kathy Griffin holding a fake, of course, mannequin-style head of Donald Trump that was blood all over it and looked to be decapitated. So she essentially went ISIS on Donald Trump, at least symbolically. And this became a huge media stir, and because of that, with everything that was going on with CNN, they were feeling some pressure to reevaluate their relationship with Kathy Griffin, them being a news agency and whatnot. So it looks as though the latest is that Kathy Griffin has been fired. She no longer has a relationship with CNN, so it's not a huge deal, like I said, because it was a one-time-a-year gig. But at the same time, CNN probably made the right call, if nothing else, for their own publicity and to cover their own butt when it came to what to do with Kathy Griffin. Now, see, here's the problem with all this. I think Kathy Griffin should have been fired from CNN years ago, not because of her political stances, but because she's not funny. And so, really, to me, it had nothing to do with whether or not the whole Donald Trump thing, which was despicable, it was uncalled for, it was inappropriate, all those horrible adjectives that you could associate with this. But at the same time, really, she shouldn't have had that job in the first place because she's not good at her job. And so that was my big beef with it. I mean, for goodness sake, she's not even funny in an episode of Seinfeld, which I didn't think was possible. She's got that one episode of Seinfeld where she's Jerry's assistant. Now, Jerry's reaction to how ridiculous she is pretty funny in that episode. But Kathy Griffin herself, she tries to pull off several jokes, and I don't know. There's some people, I'm sure, that like her. She wouldn't be as famous as she is if there weren't some people that didn't like her brand of humor, I suppose. But I never really have thought Kathy Griffin was all that funny. And to me, this whole Donald Trump thing is just one more example of her being not funny. Because I don't know in what universe she thought that holding a fairly realistic-looking, if, you know, made up, decapitated head of the president was going to be funny. I mean, it kind of felt like she was standing in a room by herself and had the picture taken. It's like, no, see, it's a joke. Really? Nobody? Decapitated head's not funny? man, tough room. It kind of felt like that's what she was. She, I don't get what the punchline was. Now, granted, these photos were leaked prematurely. In other words, the bit that they were recording didn't. We don't have the full context of it because, and probably never will now, of what the joke was supposed to be. But considering it's Kathy Griffin, I have a hard time believing it was going to be funny anyway. But my point in all this is, it seems to me that she was, you know, trying to go for shock value funny, and even that didn't work. And even a lot of the liberals were denouncing her after this, and so she was just kind of... And granted, comedy's tricky. I try to do comedy every now and then, too, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Occasionally you have a joke that bombs, even the people that are really good at it. And by that I mean people that aren't me. Sometimes tell jokes, and they just completely bomb. They're left out in the cold. They have no idea what to do, and they just kind of have to grin and move on. But at a certain point, you have to ask yourself, okay, the odds of this are being funny are practically nothing, and the chances that it's horribly offensive to a lot of people are really high. Maybe I shouldn't do this joke. And I think that if she had taken, I don't know, 10 seconds worth of reflection before doing this, she would have determined that this was a really stupid idea. A monumentally stupid idea. So, to sum all that up, I don't really frankly care that she got fired, because let's just say that Kathy Griffin hadn't got fired, CNN kept their relationship with her. You know, does that reflect badly on CNN? Yeah, I think it does, but it also reflects badly on CNN that they have people that aren't funny on their supposed comedy New Year's thing. And so, was I going to watch it? No, not really. So it didn't affect me much one way or the other whether or not she kept her job on the New Year's Eve festival. But, you know, either way, it doesn't really matter to me all that much. But to everybody out there that is upset about this, calling for her to be investigated, calling for her to be essentially removed from the public sphere after this, I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I'm just asking you to think about this, because put this idea in your head and ask yourself this question. This is my challenge to you. Would you be this upset if the decapitated head she were holding were President Barack Obama? That's the only question I'm asking you. I'm asking you to ask yourself that question. If it were Barack Obama, would you be this offended by it? Because keep in mind, this is actually not the first time this has happened, as strange as it seems. Now, it was not this blatant, it was not this in your face, but keep in mind that there was a decapitated head of President George W. Bush on an episode of Game of Thrones. If you look through, and granted it was much more well hidden and, like I said, not as in your face as this was, but there's actually one of the decapitated heads on the spikes in the background is, I mean, it's pretty clearly George W. Bush. And the people on Game of Thrones are not big Bush fans, apparently. But this has actually happened before. It was distasteful then. It's distasteful now. And granted, I'm trying not to play this game because it's the obvious low-hanging fruit in this debate. But if it had been Barack Obama's head that some conservative held out, that would have been the worst thing to have ever happened, and they should be publicly tarred and feathered. So I understand that there's a great deal of hypocrisy going on, and that's fine to point out, but it is important to ask ourselves, for the sake of consistency, if this were Barack Obama's head, would all the people that are big Donald Trump fans now, would they be upset if it was Barack Obama? Would they be doing what a lot of liberals are doing right now, which is saying, look, it was just a joke, they didn't mean it that way, it wasn't really a threat, it's not that big a deal? Because if that's the case, if you wouldn't be as upset about this as Barack Obama, I do think you may have to question, am I being consistent on this? Because I think it would be offensive regardless of what president it was. I don't think it's right to hold up anybody's decapitated head depicting a real person. But anyway, just something to think about. So I really want to hear your comments on this. And keep in mind, my throat is not exactly at 100% today. In fact, I'm going to have a cough drop in my mouth pretty much throughout the duration of the show. So I'm very willing to take calls today. 860-1440 would be the way to do that. We'll be back.
Newlyweds in the back of a limousine.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend all to the happiness of man. Thomas Jefferson.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. We're about to go to the phones, and we have a couple lines open. 860-1440 are the way to get in. Before we do jump to the phones, I wanted to mention it's important to shop local, buy local products. think about our local economy and patron them as much as you can. Buy from our local companies who give back to our community. Cumulus Media supports the River Region local businesses that we've got right here, including Inline Lighting, Home Furniture, and the bakery. So whatever your needs, from large to small, just think, shop, and buy local as you're going through whatever need you have, home, entertainment, whatever. We got some great businesses here. Please support them. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Joey on line one. Good morning, Joey.
Yeah, I got a question. I understand, you know, it was wrong what she did about his head. But thing is, I keep hearing everybody talking about if it was Obama. But you're a reporter or a journalist. They did Obama just like that, too. I remember when the Tea Party had rallies and they had pictures like he the Antichrist and all kinds of stuff. Then they had nooses. You could pull up on the internet where they had nooses around a dog head of Obama. So it's not just if it was Obama, because they did Obama like that too.
Joey, I'm actually not a journalist. I'm a commentator. But that aside, I'm going to need you to cite your sources on that, because I really don't remember that. I mean, maybe it happened and it escaped my notice, but if you'll cite some sources for me somewhere I can go to see these pictures.
Now, in fact, if you go to the Ricky Smiley Facebook website, he put it on there, reminding everybody how they did Obama the same way. Then they used to have rallies and have rifles and stuff. You don't remember that either?
I mean, I remember people marching with rifles, but I mean, that has nothing to do with the president.
Yeah, but you can't just sit there and say that they didn't did Obama the same way, because they did do him like that.
Well, again, like I said, if it happened, I haven't seen it. I have to check this out.
Okay, you don't remember they was calling him the Antichrist?
I can't remember what I haven't seen, Joey. I'm not saying that it never happened. I'm saying if it happened, I got to see evidence of it.
Okay, but how you going to, if you don't know evidence that they didn't do it, why are you just going to say that they didn't do them like that? Because I know for a fact they did them like that.
Joey, look, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying if that evidence is out there, if it exists, I have yet to see it. If I see it, I'll acknowledge it. But I hadn't seen it.
Go on the internet and pull it up, and they got pictures of it.
Okay, and what was the site?
Just go pictures of Obama, and then put it in the internet. It's gonna pop up. You'll see it.
All right. Thank you, Joey.
It's all on the internet everywhere.
All right. Thank you, Joey. I appreciate it. All right. So I'll probably do a little bit of research there in the there in the commercial break. I can't do it right now because it's not much fun listening to somebody Google things. So I will look into that, Joey. Appreciate your call. You know, maybe that did happen. If it happened, I would have denounced it back then. Wouldn't have said that it was okay then. And I mean, like I said, that's why I brought up the whole double standard thing. If that's something that you would have approved of with Obama but not with Trump, then you have a double standard. So that being said, I do want to ask some questions about the whole Kathy Griffin deal. Was this apology sincere? Because she did come out with both a text apology that I think she put out on Twitter earlier, and then she came back with a video apology, which she issued not long after that. I don't have the audio of it with me right now. I couldn't find a good source, a clean cut of it. But I did want to ask if this apology was sincere, because I really hope so. I hope that she's seen that this was a bridge too far, that she pushed the line over where she did what she said in her apology. In my opinion, it didn't seem real sincere. Now, I can't claim to get inside Kathy Griffin's heart. I don't know what's actually there. I don't know if she actually has some remorse about it. But the way she came off was kind of the sorry, not sorry thing, because the way she explained herself was, I'm a comedian, I push the line, and then I cross the line, and then I push it again, and then I cross it again, and this time I went a little too far. And then she said that I was merely mocking the mocker in chief. Well, here's what's so funny about this, because keep in mind, Kathy Griffin, like I said, her connection to CNN is that she does a annual New Year's Eve special with Anderson Cooper. Well, Anderson Cooper actually called Donald Trump out during the presidential debates for essentially using exactly the same excuse that Kathy Griffin is now using. Because when he was asking Donald Trump about the personal attacks against his fellow Republicans that were running in the primary, essentially what he said was, well, hey, they attacked me first, so I attacked them back twice as hard. Okay, well, Anderson Cooper's response to that was, with all due respect, Mr. Trump, that's the argument of a five-year-old. That when you say, well, he did it first, so I get to do it back, and because they did it, it's okay for me to do it, that's the argument of a five-year-old. That's essentially what Kathy Griffin said in her apology. Well, I was mocking him because he mocks other people. Well, him mocking other people doesn't make it okay for you to mock people. Now, granted, I don't think that mocking is necessarily always a bad thing. Sometimes if it's done in a satirical way, and as long as it's done tastefully, this obviously was not. But because of that, it's okay. But her excuse is, well, Donald Trump is constantly mocking people. He constantly steps over the line. So essentially, I felt that it was appropriate to step over the line when mocking him. Well, you can't really justify a stupid decision by saying other people made stupid decisions. And so, again, I want to believe that Kathy Griffin has really had a change of heart. I want to believe that her apology is sincere and that she can move on from this, because though I may not care for her as an entertainer much, I do care about her as a person, and I hope that she realizes why this was a mistake, that it's not just, I'm sorry that I got caught, or I'm sorry that it negatively impacted my career. But I did think it was ironic that she essentially used exactly the same excuse that Anderson Cooper got on to Donald Trump for using back in the debates. Now, interestingly enough, footage later cropped up of her doing the shoot. We have footage of her, actually, one of those behind-the-scenes things where she and the guy who's taking the pictures were talking about this, and she says that, well, once we do this, we'll probably wind, kind of jokingly, saying we'll probably wind up having to move to Mexico afterward because they're going to come after us. So that right there tells you, and again, that does not necessarily mean that her apology is not sincere, but it does take away a little bit of the effectiveness of it, in my opinion, because that shows that she knew what she was doing. That she knew that what she was doing was going to be controversial, that there were going to be people that reacted the way that they did to it. Because, I mean, keep in mind, at least half the country still likes the guy. And so, roughly half, depends on how you're reading the approval numbers. There was about half of the country that voted for him, at the very least. But when you've got something like this, when you've got Kathy Griffin saying, essentially, that she understands ahead of time that this is going to be controversial, that it's going to be... She's going for shock value. She's going for something that's going to be reacted to viscerally. It does take away a little bit of the effectiveness of her apology, in my opinion, because it's kind of an admission of, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to do it anyway. And so, again, I hope that she's turned over a new leaf. I hope that it's sincere, but it's hard to swallow, at least this way. Now, Jake Tapper, Anderson Cooper, and other CNN personalities have denounced this, and I think that their denouncement was sincere. If you see Tapper, if you see Cooper's response, to me it seemed like they were genuinely upset by this, and that's good to see. All right, we'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Everyone, welcome back.
Whoa.
My voice is still not at 100%, in case you can't tell. It faded on me a little bit there.
And you need a cough button.
Yes, I do. I need a cough button badly. You know, Longshore has a cough button. They don't give us a cough button.
Well, not yet, but maybe when we've been here 50 years.
Like Longshore?
Wrong score. We love you, Sean. Oh, he's on the air right now.
He can't hear us. No. He's on the air himself. Anyway,
using his own cough button.
Yeah, that's what he's doing, I'm sure, right now.
You okay?
All right, yeah, I'm good. Right. I'm good. All right, so I did want to get back to this, and I wanted to respond to Joey's call because, like I said, couldn't really adequately talk about it just because I couldn't sit there and research there on the air live. But looked up a little bit of this, found several examples of it, but here's the thing. The most infamous, I guess, burning in effigy of a image of Obama that I could find was by a guy named Terry Jones, who burns Obama and Clinton as a response to gay rights support. This guy's a known crackpot. He's been doing crazy things for a long time. No affiliation with the Tea Party, though. Several other examples that I found, people burning depictions of Obama dressed up as the devil, are also done with American flags. Again, not something the Tea Party would do. Furthermore, a lot of these that I've been able to find on Google search of them burning different depictions of Obama, the vast majority of them are from Muslim countries. So yep. Actually not even in America.
Yeah, the picture that I have up here on my little computer actually has a photo, a Photoshop photo from ISIS of him being beheaded.
Right.
But that's ISIS. And I don't, and we were talking between the break, don't remember the Tea Party going that far. I
well,
just
see,
don't.
And that's the thing that I was having trouble with Joey's claim, is that I knew that there were depictions of Obama being defaced, burned. I remember those over and over again. I couldn't remember anyone connected to the Tea Party, which was the claim that he made specifically. So there are depictions of different people doing things that I would not condone, depicting President Obama being attacked, being burned, being beheaded. But none of those things that I could find, at least, none so far, have been connected to the Tea Party, and I'm pretty sure had it happened, and this is why I was very skeptical of Joey's claim, I'm pretty sure had it happened, that would have been the only thing that the media covered for about a week, maybe two. And I didn't remember that specifically happening, and considering that I was at a whole lot of Tea Party rallies and meetings as well, I was pretty sure that didn't happen, at least if nothing else, not around here or at the ones that I went to in D.C. So if it ever happened, it escaped my notice, but I kind of doubt that it would have happened in direct connection to the Tea Party, because had it happened in that way, I'm pretty sure the media would have done a good job of covering it, because they had been searching for and hunting someone in the Tea Party to have done something like that, something distasteful, something that they could cover. Because I was there in the early days of the Tea Party. The media especially absolutely despised the Tea Party, couldn't stand them, came up with, in some cases, false stories about them doing things like that, which were never proven. One of the most famous ones that I thought was really hysterical is, simultaneously, while the media was referring to the Tea Party as racist and dangerous, there was a picture that was run by, I want to say it was MSNBC, if I'm remembering correctly. This was about, I would say, 6 years ago, so it's been a while. But they were talking about how violent the Tea Party were and how they were marching with rifles, which, by the way, is a constitutional right. You can, even if you're marching, I recommend people don't do that. In fact, it's one of the very few times that I'm unarmed is when I do march, so I can stay away from even the appearance of being violent. But they made a big deal about this one guy at a Tea Party rally marching with a rifle. Here's the problem, though. They cropped the picture. If you zoom out, if you saw the whole picture before it was cropped, the guy that was carrying a rifle marching with the Tea Party, he was a member of the Tea Party, but he was also black. And so what they did was they specifically cropped the picture so that they could show that there was a Tea Party person there at the rally with a rifle strapped to his back, but they conveniently left out the fact that he's a black member of the Tea Party. So it was it's funny how they strategically cropped it out there. But anyway, so just something to think about. Joey, if you want to substantiate your claim, of course, you've already used your call for today. You can send it to me on through email or Facebook and Twitter. I'm always available at those places, but I could not find any evidence of that happening with someone that was connected to the Tea Party. Normally, it happens outside the country. The examples in America that I could find that I saw where it cited the person that was responsible, none of them had anything, any kind of connection to the Tea Party specifically. So could not find anything to substantiate your claim. Now, I did want to bring this up since we're talking about specifically sort of the dual standard, this being done to other people. Does anybody remember the story of the rodeo clown? The rodeo clown story happened a few years ago And it was about this guy. He was a rodeo clown. And he, if you've ever been to a rodeo, rodeo clowns do serve a purpose in the sense that they help keep the bulls in line and the other animals. They help wrangle them, make sure they get off the stage in time for the next competitor to come in. But they also serve a second function, too, and that's why they're called rodeo clowns. They're also entertainers. And so they do different comedy bits, different sketches between the events to kind of keep the crowd warmed up and entertained because, kind of like baseball, they do different bits, they do different activities between innings. The rodeo clowns are kind of there to fill in that space between events where they're moving out the Broncos or the Bulls or whatever it is that the next thing up that they have. So this particular rodeo clown, he did a lot of political humor. And one of the things that he did was he had a mask of President Obama that he wore. This was decried as racist, insensitive, bigoted, and they covered it for, CNN specifically covered it pretty extensively for roughly 3 or 4 days or so until it was announced that the guy was fired. What they did leave out in the original stories that we learned later, though, is that this guy did a lot of political humor, and he had also worn masks of Clinton and Reagan and W. Bush and H.W. and Nixon. So it wasn't just a President Obama thing. He wore a mask of virtually all the presidents, at least the ones in recent memory. So that was one of the parts that got kind of conveniently left out. And they were not satisfied until this man became a pariah and ruined his career, made sure that he could not get work at a rodeo from then on through their coverage. And what was ironic to me about this whole thing is that this was done largely by people who I'm guessing have probably never actually been to a rodeo. Because, I mean, you're dealing with a very specific slice of America when you go and see a rodeo, when you're in a rodeo crowd. And I know because I've been to several of them, which, by the way, we have the rodeo that we support right here at Cumulus. We have the one annually that takes place in Garrett Coliseum, which I've been to many times. So When you're looking at that and looking at it through that lens, you have to keep in mind that the people in New York that found this so distasteful and horrible, probably not people that go to rodeos real often anyway. Kind of like me, I'm not going to be overly complaining about CNN keeping Kathy Griffin on. Of course, they wound up firing her anyway. But keeping Kathy Griffin on their New Year's Eve special, since I never watched their New Year's Eve special. So I found it kind of a dual standard there. But I do want to say this to other folks before we go to the phones. It is okay to point out the hypocrisy here, because I saw several people, I'm not the first one to come up with this, that were pointing out the parallels between the rodeo clown and what happened with Kathy Griffin with President Trump the other day. It's okay to point out the hypocrisy and the dual standards of the media and the left. However, that can't be our only response. Because if our only response is, well, they do it too, then we're no better than Kathy Griffin's apology, where she said, well, I was mocking him because he mocks other people. Well, that doesn't give you the right to take it another step further. It doesn't even really give you the right to go as far as that other person did. If you think the other person is doing wrong, that is not a justification for you doing wrong in response to it. In fact, and I'm going to go full preacher mode on you here, the whole point of the Gospels is when someone slaps you, you turn the other cheek. You don't respond in kind. That was one of the core messages that Jesus Christ brought in his Sermon on the Mount. Is that you don't respond to people the same way. Part of what it means to be spiritual, part of what it means to be godly, is that when someone slights you, you forgive them. You don't react the way the world tells you to react. And so when we're thinking about it from that vantage point, I think it's important for us to keep in mind that just because someone else, just because the media ruined this guy's career, called for his firing, called for him to essentially be cast out of society, at least in the public sphere, that doesn't make it okay for us to do that to Kathy Griffin. So I'm not saying don't point out the hypocrisy. I'm not saying don't be upset about it. I'm saying consider that when you're involved in your discourse with you and other people on this matter. Do you want to go to the phones real quick? What's this guy's name, Joe?
I know if you knew you'd have trouble. Enoch.
Enoch. Okay, Enoch.
I believe.
All right. Yeah, Bible name. Let's go to Enoch on line one. Good morning,
Enoch. Good morning, Caleb. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
just fine. I have a statement and a question.
Yes, sir.
My question is, I'm just wondering, when did Kathy Griffin start representing the Democratic Party or any progressives for that matter?
Well, she is a progressive. She's been a loud voice for the progressives for a long time. She was very anti-Trump. She was actually involved in the Hillary Clinton campaign. She is not a representative of the Democrat Party. And I'm not trying to paint what she did onto the entirety of the Democrat Party either.
Yeah, because according to my understanding, even Democrats in Congress and the Senate have come out against what she did.
Several have. And I brought up that they had, and also that Jake Tapper and Anderson Cooper had.
Yes, that needs to be acknowledged also.
I agree.
But I'm not sure how long you did your little Google search there as far as the parodies of Obama, but there, if you take a little time after you get finished with the broadcast or whatever, if you look at it really closely, there are some images of Obama being hanged, him and his wife and his children being portrayed as monkeys and apes. This is nothing brand new. And so just because you have, and in fact, I really don't see Democrats or even famous celebrities who claim to be progressive doing that as much as I saw when Obama was president. And so I don't think there's enough room to throw rocks at glass houses, because there's a litany of insults and things that were committed against President Obama.
No, and there were, and I actually brought up several of those, talked about the ones where he was being hanged, burned, sometimes both. You know, that did happen, and I was just talking about that. What I was saying is Joey's claim specifically was that it was the Tea Party doing it, and I couldn't find one of those.
But I can't say that it was the Tea Party, but it's definitely...
Well, I mean, you're going to have to show some evidence for that.
If you're in that office, if you hold that office, that comes with the territory. And the thing I find kind of funny, might not be funny about it, but that President Trump, who seems to be unable to take any kind of criticism, would want the position of the most criticized office on earth.
Well, now I got to go to a great break, Enoch. Thank you, Enoch. Sorry, thank you so much for your call. But yeah, 100% right on that, because I said when President Trump was elected, we may have elected the only person that may be more thin-skinned than President Obama. Because remember, he had a hard time dealing with criticism too. And it looks like Donald Trump is in that same kind of vein of thought, that same kind of light. So there's an abundance of oversensitivity in the White House over the past 8 years and currently. So that's something that I do wish that we could move past a little bit. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't help that there are people doing stuff like this, not just Kathy Griffin, but people that did this to President Obama. And that's what I'm saying. We've got to be consistent. We have to say if it's distasteful, if it doesn't move the conversation forward, if it's not helpful, then it ought not be done regardless of who it's making fun of. And that's an appropriate standard for anyone to agree to, I think. All right, we'll be back.
Into a new disaster, so I run to you.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
A new children's book released in the UK teaches kids about terrorism. What does it say? We have the details now on The Patriot Preacher. Hey everybody, welcome back. Patriot Preacher, Hour 2 is on now. Contrary to popular belief of this past week, I have not I've not been fired. They didn't pull a Bill O'Reilly on me, just, you know, fire me while I was gone for a week. That wasn't it. So I was just sick, and I'm back. I would say I'm at maybe 60-65%, so enough to be on the air at least.
65% of what? I don't know why that just...
Well, usually where I am. You know how Rush has that running joke about doing the show with half his brain tied behind his back? Well, I'm doing it today, but involuntarily, so...
Well, like I said, I'm here just in case. Other than that...
Well, but I think I've got it. But I do want to hear your phone calls, 860-1440, if you have an opinion on anything. And I'll be glad to take some phone calls a day to give my voice a rest. But nonetheless, we are going to carry on with the news because we have a lot to cover. This actually broke a little bit earlier in the week, but of course, being off the air, I wasn't able to talk about it. And it's one that didn't really get picked up. I thought this was interesting. This children's book that got released in the UK is supposed to teach terrorism to little kids, not teach them to engage in terrorism, because that's what goes on in the Middle East. They actually have children's books and children's programming specifically showing kids how to engage in jihad, which is really creepy. If you look up some Al Jazeera programming on teaching terrorism, if you're interested in looking at that. But that's not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about today is a book that has been released in the UK teaching... It's essentially teaching teachers how to deal with the subject of terrorism. So when I say it's a book on teaching terrorism, it's not for the kids specifically. It's essentially giving school teachers ideas on how to approach this subject with kids. So the recommendations in this are pretty interesting. One thing that I thought was weird is that one of the recommendations is it talks about... writing a letter to a terrorist, which I thought was kind of an odd strategy to take, that their recommendation is, well, when you're dealing with this, one of the ways that you can do this is write a letter to a terrorist, which, A, I don't really understand what you would say to a terrorist. Like, why are you a dirtbag? I don't know how else you would enter that. Secondly, if they're going to be delivered, I mean, can't we just follow the post? If apparently the postal service knows where all the terrorists are, can't we just follow them and then arrest the guy? But anyway, so it's an odd strategy to take. I don't necessarily think it's horrible. I just don't see the purpose in it, and I don't know how that would help with what they're trying to accomplish. Now, of course, the book goes into great length explaining how all Muslims are not terrorists. Yeah, we know that. It gets preached to us 1,000 times a day, especially when something like this happens. And interestingly enough, this book was apparently released just a couple days after the Manchester bombing. But it talks about how terrorists are, how not all Muslims are terrorists, and it talks about how terrorists are caught up in a radical, perverted ideology. Well, yeah, I would have to say that that's true. The problem is that ideology is called fundamental Islam. So when you're going back through history, you're talking about what being a member of Islam, in other words, subjection, well, that's what that ideology is called. And so that's the problem that we're running into, is that it seems like oftentimes when we have one of these, we go a little too far out of our way to make excuses for the terrorist. So essentially what this is saying is, it's not really blaming the person itself. It's not necessarily blaming the terrorist per se. It's saying that they're caught up in this destructive ideology, which technically is true, but it's still the person's choice to go out and commit these acts of terror. And I will say this, and I probably do this too much myself, which is why I'm bringing it up. I think, especially in the age of political correctness, people are a little too obsessed with the disclaimer, because especially when everything that we say or do is recorded, especially when at any given time someone can have their phone just recording everything that we say, especially if you're someone like me that has a big public platform, everything I say is recorded. So we have to be really careful with what we're saying and that it's not taken in the incorrect context. And I understand that necessity because I do it myself, being a radio personality, but I think we're a little too obsessed with the disclaimer. And unfortunately, I think what that does is it wastes a lot of time that we could be having a productive conversation about the issues of the day. And terrorism, I think, is probably the single biggest example of that, because whenever something comes out of terrorism, it seems like everybody is, even conservatives, even myself, we're real quick to come out and say, by the way, we understand that not all Muslims are terrorists. Now we can actually move on and have the conversation. And there are some people that are so obsessed with the disclaimer, it seems like they do nothing but do the disclaimer and don't actually talk about the problem, which happens a lot on the left. I don't think that people on the left are necessarily trying to stay away from the conversation so much as that they are so terrified of being taken out of context or people being offended by what they say. That they're afraid to talk about the actual issue in fear of being mistaken of being Islamophobic, for example. And so because they're so afraid of it, they're afraid to actually talk about the real problems that are there. I've said this for a long time. We talked about it at length last week. When we're talking about terrorism, we get distracted on all that. We spend so much time talking about the Muslims that are not violent, we're not actually having a conversation about the ones that are. Now, they are the minority, but it doesn't do any good to talk about the peaceful Muslims because they're peaceful. They're not bothering anybody. So it really doesn't help anyone to talk about them. I'm not saying don't acknowledge that they're there. I'm not saying never mention them at all. I'm just saying that we spend so much time on that, even though they're not the issue, they're not the problem, that we neglect to talk about the real issue, which is the sects of the Muslim community, the Islamists, that are violent, that do want a caliphate, that do want to rule over people, that do want to tax or enslave or kill people that are infidels. Those are the people we have to talk about because they're the ones that are the issue. And so we get so obsessed with that disclaimer for that reason. Now, why is that necessary? I think it's because we assume the worst in others. We assume that if someone doesn't give the disclaimer, they mean it in the worst possible way. And I'm not assigning this to one side of the aisle or the other. I'm saying that, unfortunately, because there's always somebody that's going to be outraged because everything's recorded, because, especially with the internet now, everything seems like it takes place in a public space, that we're so worried about being taken the wrong way that we see the worst in others, and we see anything that they say that could be taken offensive as offensive. We take it in the worst possible way that it could be. And, you know, sometimes we do the same to the left. I'm not saying that we're free from any blame on that, but it's something that I do think we've got to consider. Now, if someone has a clear pattern of behavior, that they have a history of depicting things in the worst possible light, that they specifically go out of their way to depict someone that way, then I understand jumping to the worst possible conclusion. You know, if David Duke says something degrading to black people, I think it's fair to say, yeah, he probably doesn't like black people based on that statement because he has a very long history of not liking black people. But let's try to give people the benefit of the doubt, especially when people are trying to say, well, we're trying to come around on this. Because this is a side effect, I think, of the left tending to blame everything on, different aspects of culture, different aspects of society, and Republicans tend to make it all about the individual and want to say that there's nothing else that has anything to do with it. Well, we can talk about both. We can have both in the conversation. Now, at the end of the day, it does all come down to the individual. It is an individual choice. But what I'm saying, as far as the disclaimer goes, let's just stop trying to see the worst in people and try to take people at their word and try to take things in the best possible light, at least on the onset. Now, if we find out we're wrong, we can, you know, go along with wherever the evidence leads. But let's try to give each other the benefit of the doubt, give each other a break at least once in a while. Just something to think about. 860-1440 are the numbers. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 13:34-35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. I did want to bring up a different story and change gears here, but just to be fair to my callers, so I'm not jumping subjects with them, I'm going to go ahead and jump to the phones first. So let's go to Mark on line one. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, Caleb. How you doing?
I've been better, but I'm doing all right. Thanks for asking. How are you, Mark?
I'm with you. I'm just fine. Hey, look here. You touched on a few things earlier, and, you know, you were talking about the book that was coming out that was talking about, you know, immediately the default button is not all Muslims or terrorists and everything.
Right.
But I tell you what, I think the wording ought to be changed, and it needs to be said like this. Not all Muslims are jihadis, but all jihadis are Muslim.
Well,
and I don't think
That's accurate. You know? I mean, you don't engage in jihad unless you're a follower of the Quran. So, yes, I mean, that would be the case.
Absolutely. And, I mean, that was the great Rick Santorum brought that up in the last election. But
that's right. I believe it was in his, I want to say it was his first debate he brought that up.
Exactly. Now, that's something, you know, that. Look, I got into a little exchange on Facebook the other day. I want to get your opinion on this because it just totally baffles my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I was making the comparative there about, you know, the Manchester bombing, the terrorism and everything. And, you know, I just basically, you know, said this in a nutshell is, you know, all the world's great religions at some point went through a reformation, except for Islam. There's still 7th century practices there, Sharia. And until they go through a major reformation, I really don't think Islam, as we know it today, is ever really going to be accepted worldwide to people that believe in, you know, just basic human survival. And let me tell you something. This is going to blow your mind. It blew my mind. I got a lot of responses from people that lived in London. And I got a response from this one girl that lived in Manchester. Now, of all places, Manchester.
Uh-huh.
Now, she immediately, you know how the liberals do, they want to run back straight 800 years to the Inquisition and the Crusades. Now, they do that every time when you bring up something about what's happening currently. They
President Obama did that himself in one of the prayer breakfasts a few years back.
Right. Exactly. Which goes back to my original point that the world's religions have went through, you know, reformations. Now, I know exactly why the Crusades happened, and, you know, you can't really get into it with them about that or their heads will explode. They just can't wrap their heads around it. So I just say, listen, until they go through a reformation, did you know this one girl from Manchester called me? Now, I'm taking the side of the victims here. I'm not taking the side of the terrorists.
Right.
Taking the side of the victims. I got called a racist, a bigot, an Islamophobic blanky blank blank. Just because I made the statement, now this girl from Manchester just had a bomb in there, and I'm taking the side of the victims, and I get called all of these vicious names when I'm sitting here thinking, listen, if you were in the desert starving, I'm the person that would give you a drink of water as a Christian. I'm the one that would give you something to eat if you needed it. These radicals would never do anything like that towards you, but yet I'm the bad guy. Can you explain to me why people, what is the disconnect here?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, there's a, and this is where my very fancy communication degree comes in handy. There's something known as a programmed response when we're talking about human communication, to where a stimulus happens. In other words, something happens around a person, and because they have been programmed to think and react a certain way, they will automatically default to the response that is already programmed in their brain, almost without thinking, kind of like a reflex.
And like a drone.
Somewhat, yes. It's almost as though we have been pre-programmed to respond in a certain way. Now, unfortunately, a lot of, and there's, I'm sure that there's some programmed responses that I could come up with on the right here in just a second, but since we're dealing with this, I'm going to talk about this particular situation. Typically, if there is something that they find offensive, that they have been told is offensive to a certain group of people, their default response is always racist, bigot, and then insert blank phobia to whatever subject they're talking about. Here's the irony in all that, though. Muslim is not a race. You do not have to be a certain skin color. You do not have to have a certain genetic background to be a Muslim. Ergo, saying that because someone is afraid of Muslims, which I don't know, I don't think that you are, but saying someone does not like Muslims is racist doesn't make any sense, because it's, you're dealing with two completely different issues. A
right.
Bigot is defined as someone who is essentially set in their ways and will not listen to reason or outside ideas. So that one doesn't necessarily apply to what you're talking about either. And as far as an Islamophobe, now I don't know about you, Mark, but I'm actually an Islamophobe. I am afraid of Islamists. I'm not afraid of Muslims. That's a completely different thing. But I am afraid of Islamists because the word Islam means to subject, to bring
right.
into subjection. So a person that is an Islamist is someone who believes in a global caliphate that everyone who is not Muslim must either become Muslim or be subject to Muslim law. So
absolutely.
I actually am afraid of Islam. I'm not afraid of Muslims. I have friends that are Muslims.
Right.
But
and
I'm not,
you know,
but
I'm,
I am afraid of Islam.
I'm the same way with you, too, and I'll tell you one of the reasons why I am, Caleb, is because there is no huge outcry. There's no groundswell movement among, quote-unquote, moderate Muslims to denounce every time something like this happens. You know, where are these hundreds of thousands and this majority moderate Muslims that totally disagree with what's going on now? They're nowhere to be heard. They're nowhere to be found. You know, I heard somebody make a pretty good point the other day. You know what the difference between a moderate Muslim and a radical Muslim is?
What's that?
A moderate Muslim is a Muslim that stands by solidly and just observes a radical Muslim committing a beheading on somebody. You know,
I'll say this, because that's not the case in every single instance I've seen in the media, and know personally some moderate Muslims that are actually they can't stand the radical Muslims because that makes them look bad. And so I understand that and appreciate your call so much, Mark. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Love getting that commentary from you. But here's the thing about all that. There are some moderate Muslims out there that really do love their community. They just want to live in peace with their family, just like you and me. And they're really not trying to hurt anybody. But there are some in that camp that, even though I know it's not their fault, I know they don't bear any responsibility for it, I do wish that they would be more vocal about their opposition to radical Islam. Because I know they don't support it. It makes their community look bad, and I don't blame them for being upset with that. They are upset with the radical Muslims for the same reason I'm upset with people like the Westboro Baptist Church. Because they are doing something in the name of Christ that I would disapprove of. And so I understand that frustration. All I'm asking is, because I know that there are some out there that do this, for those of you who are moderate Muslims, who don't like the radical Islam, that just all I'm saying is please be more vocal about it. Because I've said this to different organizations on the conservative side, when you're talking about, because I think the GOP is playing a dangerous game right now, trying to not upset the apple cart when it comes to some of these factions that are coming in, like your Richard Spencers, your Alex Joneses, your, if not white nationalists, at least sympathetic to the white nationalist cause, thinking that we can use them. No, get the nuts out of your midst. Same thing with the Muslims, same thing with Black Lives Matter. Any of these political movements, you have got to be ruthless in keeping the nuts out of your midst. Because the second someone sees that, they're going to associate you with them. That's how infiltration works. And I don't want to be standing next to a guy like Richard Spencer or Alex Jones any more than I imagine most peaceful, moderate Muslims want to be standing next to someone who, even if he doesn't actually go out and commit jihad, approves of it. But the simple truth is 40% of Muslims in this country, according to Pew Research, believe that, at least in some instances, they believe that jihad would be an acceptable way to implement Sharia law in the United States, and that Muslims should not be subject to the laws of the land. They should be subject to Sharia the way they are in some places in Europe, where they've set up separate courts and separate communities for them. That's not something that can be consistent or coexist with. So there's at least a sizable portion of the Muslim population that believes these things, and we've got to deal with that. We can't just ignore it or put our heads in the sand. So tough subject to deal with, but one that I think we have to deal with. Just something to think about. We'll be right back. 860-1440 are the numbers. Hanging, darling, please lay low.
Darling, won't you ease my worry? This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The general hopes and trusts that every officer and man will endeavor to life and act as becomes a Christian soldier, defending the dearest rights and liberties of his country. George Washington.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. So before we move on, I wanted to mention this. The Sounds of Summer concert series returns to the shops at East Chase Thursday, June 1st, so today. This free event is hosted by News Radio 1440. It kicks off at 6 with Riverdan taking the stage at 7. Enjoy the music and fun, including kids' activities, food vendors, and your chance to win a $50 gift card for the Shops at East Chase. We'll see you at the Sounds of Summer with the Shops at East Chase at News Radio 1440. So be sure to check that out today at East Chase. Go out, turn out, support these local vendors. Be glad to see you there. Honestly, I was planning on going to this. Probably won't make it today because I'm still feeling pretty under the weather, and I don't want to infect anybody else. So I'm just gonna...
other than me,
right? Well, well, you're different, Joe. You kind of have to be in here with me. My dad gave it to me, so I blame him. But anyway, let's go to Shiree on line one. Good morning, Shiree.
No, Shiree.
Shiree, okay.
Good morning, preacher man. I was just listening at your conversation.
Yes, sir.
The thing that you were saying about Al-Islam and Muslims. Mm-hmm. And I just want to ask a question because I want to know, have you all read the Quran?
I have read sections of it. I have not read it cover to cover, no.
I want to just share, if you read what God said, let there be no force in the religion. Let there be no force. Islam, you know, you can't force it on anyone. And I'm a Muslim, and I believe in one humanity. I believe in the goodness of all peoples. And that what you see as something that might be criminality is not to be identified with the religion of Al-Islam. And I know you were saying you was afraid of Islam. There's nothing to be afraid of Islam, because Islam means peace. And one wants peace, he has to submit his own soul and his own will to God Almighty.
Well, now...
And let me say one more thing for you. Let me share one more thing.
Okay, go ahead.
One more thing is that we all are Muslim, if you know what Muslim means. See, everything have a meaning. Let me share with you what Muslim means, one who submits himself or herself to his creator. It's just like you born submitting to God Almighty, every human being. And that's why I said, I'm a Muslim, but I see everyone as human family. As one human family, and all of us got to stand before God on the day of judgment. And those people that are doing that discriminate killing and bombing, they don't have nothing to do with the religion. It's just like the Ku Klux Klan. You have to distinguish them from Christianity.
But here's the thing, though. They do draw their inspiration from verses in the Quran that do say to smite infidels, to make great slaughters amongst them until they have converted. So... And I don't believe, now I want to say this first. I don't believe that you're one of those people. You seem to be like a nice enough guy that really does, you know, believe in his religion and doesn't want to hurt anyone. I'm just asking from your standpoint, how do you say that it has nothing to do with the religion when they are pulling verses out of the Quran, maybe pulling them incorrectly, but they are pulling that out of the Quran?
It's the same way that the Ku Klux Klan were pulling verses from the Bible. Even the slaveholder, they pulled verses from the Bible. And my ancestor was slave in this country, but I done forgave all the slave owners. I want to see peace and happiness, and I want to live my life, and I want to see everyone who said he's a Christian or Muslim or Jew to live in peace and in freedom and equality. There's no force in the religion. There's nobody forced me to suffer Islam. I was a good Christian. But I come to find out that I wasn't at the complete stage of my life when I found Al-Islam. Al-Islam made me to see all peoples as one humanity, one God, one humanity. And that here in America, we can live that life because we have freedom of religion. And that freedom of religion was established 1400 years ago during the time of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. He didn't force anyone to accept his religion. This religion was spread by peace. Now, the misguided history would tell you that people had to be forced into the religion.
Well,
God don't want nobody to serve him by force.
Well, here's the thing, Shiree, I just have a question for you.
My name is Sabri.
Sabri. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I've got your name written down here wrong on the list. I apologize. Shiree.
Yes,
I do have a question for you on the Quran, though. When you said that the Prophet Muhammad didn't try to convert anybody by force, didn't he when he moved away from Mecca And what's the name of the city, Medan or whatever it is? I don't know how to pronounce it.
He didn't move away on his own. They forced him out.
Right, I'm aware of that. But when he left Mecca.
Yeah, but the pagan, he didn't leave on his own. When the pagan was all those oppression and fighting and wanting to step out the true teaching of humanity, the pagan drove him out. So God told him to leave and go to Medina.
Right. When he was in Medina, though, he took power and he started essentially forcing out anybody that wasn't a Muslim. So
No. That's not, that's the start of history. The Prophet Muhammad didn't force people out. He asked the people to accept the peace. You can practice your own religion. The Jews practiced their religion that was there, and the Muslims practiced their religion that was there. So no one forced them, forced no one to accept the religion. That's not Islamic.
Well, and again, I'm still trying to learn here. What about the taxes that he placed on non-Muslims for living in Medina?
Well, what it was is just like a tax on America. Everybody had to pay taxes here because.
But there's a difference in paying taxes for everybody and paying specific higher taxes because you're not a Muslim.
No, the Muslims had to pay tax too. They pay tax called zakat. It's a tax that to help the poor. It's just like America. In America, everybody lives here regardless of faith or no faith. We have to pay tax because we're living off the land. We're living off the government protecting us. They're fixing a road for us. They're making sure we have peace and safety. So we have to give back some. So the problem when he went to Medina, everybody had to contribute to the upkeep of the city.
And I understand that everyone paid the tax, but I'm saying, was there not an extra tax on anyone that wasn't a Muslim?
No, it wasn't an extra tax. It's the same. It was a minimum tax for providing the security in the city because when you got to Medina, there wasn't a government there. There was just people there that was trying to live their life. And then those that when they invited them there, they accepted the religion. But wasn't nobody forced to accept the religion.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on with us, Shavri.
Let me share one more thing.
All right. One more thing. I got to go to a break.
Okay. I'd just like to share to your radio audience that they don't have to be afraid of Islam. Nor Muslim, if they follow the religion, just like we don't have to be afraid of the Ku Klux Klan, where they're not Christian. See, they're not Christian, so we're not afraid of them because we know there's goodness in America. You got good peoples in America, black, white, brown, red, and we're going to look for the good of the people. As a Muslim, that's what I look for. I look for the goodness of all people, even though we might differ, but we still got to look at the goodness of our difference.
All right. Well, I appreciate your thoughts so much, Mr. Shavri, and I genuinely mean this when I say this. I wish more Muslims took your stance on it. I really do.
I'd like to come down and talk to you on your radio show one day.
Well, I don't know when exactly we would do that, but you're welcome to call in any time. We'll look into that later, but I don't want to set up an appointment right here live on the air.
No, not on the air. I said maybe later on we'll talk.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be up for that. We'll meet sometime, have supper or something like that. But thank you so much for being on. You have a good day. Now, ask and ye shall receive. I asked for some moderate Muslims to be more vocal and more outspoken, and that's exactly what we got. Now, from a historic standpoint, he and I disagree pretty significantly on what happened. But, maybe that's something that we can sort out and maybe even talk about on the air a little more. But I asked for some more moderate Muslim voices to come out and denounce Islamists or denounce jihad. He considers himself an Islamist as well, I guess. But the point is, that's exactly what I got. So hopefully more of that to come. We'll be back. Star Spangled Sermon is up next.
I don't need no quarters, don't need any dime.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Hebrews 8:10. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my laws into their minds, and I will write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. This is going to be the end of our show, though, so we need to go ahead and wrap that up. We have, of course, the Star Spangled Sermon coming up. Before we jump into that, I did want to mention our good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Now, they've been in business here for 50 years right here in the river region. They can handle pretty much anything from a little oil change to a major engine repair. Anything that you need done on your car, they can take care of it, or they can recommend you to somebody who does, but they can handle pretty much anything in-house. At least that's been my experience with them. I've never had a problem that I brought to them, no matter how unusual, that they couldn't handle. So be sure to check them out. That's Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway right here in Montgomery. So go give them a visit today. All right. So in the Star Spangled Sermon, we're going to talk about one of the Psalms. And this particular Psalm is a Psalm of David. It's one of the what's known as a praise Psalm. So the primary purpose of this Psalm is to give praise to and admonish God. This is one of the later Psalms, Psalm 145. And we're going to look at verses 17 through 21. The Lord is righteous in all his ways, all kind in all deeds. The Lord is near to all who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth. He will fulfill the desire of those who fear him. He will also hear their cry and will save them. The Lord keeps all who love him, but all the wicked he will destroy. My mouth will speak the praise of the Lord, and all flesh will bless his holy name forever and ever. There's a few things that stick out to me reading this particular passage in the Psalm. Notice how all the language is conditional. That's something that jumped out at me right away. Because the way David describes it says that the Lord is righteous. He establishes that very early on. The Lord is righteous regardless of everything else. And he is kind in all of his deeds. However, when he says the Lord is near to those who call upon him, and to those who call upon him in truth, then he goes further and says he fulfills the desire of those who fear him, and goes on and on. Notice that all the things, when God promises blessings, they're all conditional. They're all based upon the actions that you take in your life, the decisions that you make. Now, this is obviously before the time of Christ, but David is not suggesting that we force God into anything, that we curry his favor through essentially racking up brownie points with him so that we get what we want out of him. God's not a giant cosmic gumball machine, and David understands that. But what he is saying is God looks favorably upon those who desire to follow him, who start out with the fear of God, and then that motivates them to action. That he essentially blesses their endeavors because they're endeavors that the Lord himself would have approved of. And so it's interesting to me that he goes out of his way to use this conditional language to explain that, yes, the Lord is good and he's righteous regardless of what you do. But what you do greatly affects the way he decides to bless you. So God's righteousness is established. Your righteousness is what's in question. And so, however righteous you are, that's going to be dependent upon your relationship with the Lord, because if you're both righteous, you'll have kind of a mutually beneficial relationship. I think there are far too many people in our society nowadays, because we've curried a society that wants to accept everything, that wants to say whatever you believe is right and good, and it doesn't really matter what you believe or even what you do as long as you're sincere in it. In that sense, they kind of want to make God into a doting, senile old grandfather who doesn't see anything wrong in his grandchildren. That no matter what they do, oh, that's all right. Kind of like if you ever had a relative like that that just had one particular family member that they could do no wrong, nothing they did was ever less than perfect. That's kind of what a lot of people want God to be. But that's not how God's described in the Bible. God's not a grandfather, he's a father who sees the mistakes of his children and who goes out of his way to correct them when the necessity of that is there. Who, when he sees something done wrong, he will lovingly and with the intention of a correction being made there, at times even punish his children, even though he doesn't necessarily want to. See, too many people want a God that just kind of sits back and looks at creation and says, and a good time was had by all. But that's not what God calls us to be. And David understood that even before knowing the full revelation of God that came in the New Testament. You see, God's called a father for a reason. He knows us. He lives with us. He watches us. He protects us and looks after us, sure. That's part of what a father does, too. But he also wants what's best for us. And sometimes the best thing for us is to have to endure some correction, endure some hardship, sometimes learn a lesson that can't be obtained so easily, something that we've got to honestly work and suffer a little bit for before we can fully comprehend it. And that's what David is saying here, that yes, God is righteous and he's kind, but his blessings are still conditional. Your actions still determine how God reacts to you, because he is righteous and he's not going to change. You're not always righteous. You can change. You can make mistakes. And so sometimes God has to adjust what he does, not because he's changed, but because you've changed. But he does make this promise. You know, one of my favorite passages that C.S. Lewis ever wrote, and for those of you who are maybe new to the program, don't know me as well, he's probably my favorite author of a non-biblical nature. In other words, someone who was not inspired. There's a great passage. This is the very first time that Aslan is introduced in the Chronicles of Narnia series. Now, it's not the first book, but it's the first one that Lewis ever wrote. In The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the four Pevensey children meet with the beavers for the first time, and they're explaining Aslan, who is the god character in the Chronicles of Narnia. And they're explaining that who Aslan is, and they get to the part where they say he's a lion. And Susan, one of the children, says, "Oh, I didn't realize he was a lion." And she said, I think I would be pretty nervous about meeting a lion. Is he safe?" And the reaction is pretty comical, actually. The beavers are like, "No, he's not safe. He's a lion. Have you ever met a safe lion? No, they're not safe. But they're good. Aslan is good." And so there's sort of this understanding. A lot of people want a safe God, a God that's not going to they don't like all that fire and brimstone stuff. They don't like the idea that a God would punish someone or that a God would in any way try to inhibit them from doing what they would want to do. But that's not what God is. God is, and in biblical terms, described as a lion as well. He's not safe. But he is good, and he does keep his promises. And if we live the way that he prescribes in his scripture, if we do the things that God asks us to do, then even though he's still not safe, he will look favorably upon us. Stay the course, friends.
The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.